Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. It is Old School coming to you live from Studio 76. I just mentioned in the chat room there that I was wrong. I thought it was going to take a little longer to get Nicholas tucked into bed, but he is now tucked into bed, and everything is safe and sound here at Studio 76. So we can get on with what we normally do, which is talk about Buccaneer football. I apologize. I was not able to do the show Tuesday night. Had some work conflicts. This time of the year is very crazy, and for everyone. I'm sure it's crazy for you guys. So a big shout-out to you folks who are making it here live tonight. I see we've already got people filing into the chat room. Yet another testament to either your absence of a life outside of this or your dedication to what we do and how we do it. And regardless or irregardless, in deference to the Reverend Jesse Jackson, it's awesome to have you here. My guess is next week we will not be doing a show, given that it's Christmas week. But who knows? You never know. I may be able to sneak one in Tuesday. It's just crazy. I see in the chat room a lot of people are over at One Buck Place buying up deals. Apparently a net effect of 72% off over at the West Club Concourse. And that's awesome for everyone who got deals over there. Congratulations on getting those last-minute stocking stuffers or whatever they are. So tonight's show, we're going to be a little bit relaxed, a little bit laid back. I had a little bit of an excitement. I'm not going to lie to you. And Kurt's over in the chat room. Kurt sent over, or his technical buddy sent over the schematics to get us enabled for live call-ins again, which I'm very excited about. Now, I looked through those, but at the same time, as I was looking through those diagrams, I got an upgrade to one of the pieces of software we use, and I thought for sure it was going to allow us to work without any of that hijinks and shenanigans, and it is 88% of the way there. So I wrote to their development team, and so now there's a discussion of math in the chat room. That's going to end poorly, I suspect, because math for some reason confuses people, but that'll get straightened out. Anyway, I'm with their developers tomorrow, and hopefully that means by the new year, certainly we will have interviews back up and running. So the reason I say that is because I've missed them personally. I don't know about you guys, but having Steve White or Mark Cook or Scott Reynolds or Lee from Joe Buck's Fan or, you know, whoever it happened to be, call in, I think it added a significant amount to the broadcast, and I've certainly missed him. And as of late, not that Steve White was ever not on point, but as of late, Steve White's storifies of the games have just been ridiculous. If you have not read them, I can only chalk it up to one of a couple reasons. One, you're incredibly lazy. Two, you have no interest in learning more about the game. Three, you're like the person who we got into it with on Twitter last night that thinks he's biased. Or four, you just don't know about them yet, and I don't know how that's possible. So if you haven't done that, we usually retweet them out there. On our Facebook page, on our Twitter page as well. What he does, he takes his Twitter feed from going through his recap of the game, including the screenshots, and then puts it in what's called a Storify, which puts all those Twitter feeds together. And they have been absolutely phenomenal. So, anyway, we posted that. If you don't know where it is, let me know. We can get it for you. It's on Steve White's wall as well. I apologize. I'm still fighting off this cold, doing the best I can. My blue cup is filled with orange juice. And I, like any, you know, red-blooded American man, took way more cold medicine than I should, which means I'll be going to sleep relatively quickly tonight. So, first and foremost, and by first, I mean apparently after 5 minutes of me rambling in the show, I want to send a big shout-out to everyone who came to the tailgate for our last tailgate of the year. You guys know that we had some shenanigans leading into that. We were not allowed to do our raffles. We're going to be working on that on the off-season. The proceeds of this tailgate were to go to Alex's Christmas for Kids, which is the local charity that raises money and collects bikes for kids, based on the premise that every kid should have that sort of seminal experience where they wake up on Christmas morning and they have that bike. It's a really kind of a beautiful story. Alex started this charity in 1999. It got really, really codified in 2002. We became aware of it a couple years ago, and we really wanted to blow it out for him this last time. We had some great raffle items we were going to do, and we were not allowed to do that. So what we could do is we did donations. And once again, we were blown away by the generosity of those people who come to tailgate with us, those wild bastards who come out, some of you as early as 6:30 in the morning and some of you as late as 3 in the morning from Teardown. We generated $800 in flat-out donations for Alex's charity, as well as, I think, just under 20 bikes, which was great. Those were all delivered, and the kids are going to have their bikes, and the money is going to go towards bikes as well, which is absolutely phenomenal. So to all of you who donated, to all of you who participated, to all of you who were upset about the changes in what we could do at the tailgate, thank you for your passion. This has been an amazing year from a tailgating perspective. Even though our Buccaneers have not had a very good year, we've had an undefeated tailgate season, I think was the quote that I heard. And I think that that's absolutely true. We have overcome damn near everything. This offseason will be an offseason of transition, I suspect. There will be a lot of things that are going to be happening. And you guys will be made aware of what those things are as soon as we know. And we will continue and figure out what our next season looks like. But one thing you can count on is the charitable activities are going to keep going. Things may just change their look and feel moving forward. So we may be looking to you to help out. Who knows? But the people we don't have to look to help out because they're already helping are our sponsors, Whiskey Willie's. Our man Wally over there, always Johnny on the spot with our liquor. I don't know if anyone else carries Crema Fina, but I think we buy him out of his entire supply every week. And that will absolutely happen again this week when we have our watch party for the Rams game over at our home bar, Wing House on Hillsborough. Aaron and the lovely ladies of the Wing House crew over there. Tomorrow, by the way, is Dressed to Impress. Andrea has already been talking about she's going to work in her underwear. If you guys are anywhere near there, you definitely need to get over to Wing House on Hillsborough Avenue. We'll be there Sunday for the watch party for the Rams. I know that Mama Claiborne's going to be up in St. Louis. That's her old stomping ground, and a number of people are making that trip. But we will be out watching the game with our lovely ladies from Wing House, talking about the Bucks and what could have been this season. And hopefully about a victory, though I have once again forgotten what that tastes and feels like. John Amato, I got a call from John Amato this week. I want to thank you, Roman, by the way, for sending John to call me. I didn't know what it was about. I was in the middle of meetings. I've got to call him back to give you just an idea of how good a guy this is. You guys know that we had this issue with the raffles. Roman let John know about it. John called to let me know about his attorneys and gave me a ton of information just because he's a good guy and has been through this. If you don't do business with Anywhere Transportation or Buccaneer Beads, find a reason to or send someone over there who can. This guy has done more for this community than you could count, and he certainly helped us out tremendously. So big shout-out to John Amato and his crew. Black Ops Flavor, my man Jim, and all the things that he does. And then Steakhouse Elites and a nice, nice post for us this week, culminating the tailgating season. We're hoping to rekindle that relationship with them next year as well, because that Kobe beef certainly did go down well this season as well. Now, I can see in the chat room things are already firing up about Sullivan. We will definitely be talking about him. I have one more shout-out that I've got to make sure I get to, too. Princess Nikki, Bucks Princess, I think, on Twitter. Nikki Alara was here in town. She is very popular with the people in town. And came out, it was like having a Twitter popularity contest, because she definitely got a chance to meet everybody, never got a chance to meet her. We had a great get-together at Wing House before the game, and Fred the Gurr, or Gurr the Gurr, who is now in D.C. with his dad, all the way over from the U.K., great time with those guys. I'm glad they made it out. Looking forward to more conversations with those guys. You know, it's going to be tremendous as we continue to build that relationship with those guys. So, all right. Sully. You guys know that Sully is rapidly climbing into Voldemort territory. Now, this is interesting because I know a lot of you like to assert that I just kiss Steve White's ass, or at least Chris Taylor does from Leadership South. It's not the case. One of the things that's interesting about that is Steve White and I usually agree on a lot of points, because guess what? We're usually fucking right. We know a lot about this game. And yeah, that sounds arrogant, but that's actually what it is. We're not always right. At least I can say I'm not always right. I can't say Steve's not always right. I can say I don't always agree with Steve. And since I think I'm usually right, that means I probably think he's wrong in those cases. But he, on this last game, is absolutely going after who was previously considered protected here from conversation, Mike Glennon, for having a bad game. And he makes a pretty damn compelling argument as he walks through the screenshots and the videos. I absolutely detest the route combinations in the offensive game plan of Coach Sullivan. It's not getting any better. It is astonishing how bad it is. And now the rumor is out that he's going to be interviewing for the Army job. He's clearly got ties to Army. This would make things easy. Many folks who believe that Coach Schiano is not going anywhere, whether it's a good reason or a bad reason, it doesn't really matter, believe that there has to be bloodletting at the assistant level in order to sort of satiate the crowd's desire for bloodletting. So you have to throw a couple people into the pit. Sullivan was an easy target. McNulty is the quarterback's coach. He's a former Rutgers offensive coordinator. It would be logical that he would step up, though that will look amazingly like a jobbed interview. But that absolutely could happen. Sheridan apparently, and this was in, I think, Scott Reynolds' article we talked about last week, is apparently safe. Though, again, if you think you went after Glennon in this article, in this Storify article, Steve White was all over Sheridan for all of the same shit that we have discussed throughout the entire season. Not just Steve, but myself and other people included, including you guys. The stunting and the blitzing and the stupidity. And one of the things that he brought up that I was going to bring up, which was great, how many blitzes came from Colin Kaepernick's left-hand side, which didn't make sense. Yeah, I get it. That's theoretically his blind side with a mobile quarterback. However, you're flushing him to his strong arm side. The schemes this week were absolutely atrocious. Now, with that being said, there were still some amazing individual performances. We have got some reasons to be very excited about the raw materials. The problem I have with that whole grass is greener thing, or the silver lining issue, is those pieces have been here. They're not new. What makes us think that the same chef in the kitchen with all the same ingredients is suddenly going to be able to make something that doesn't look like fucking chicken shit sandwiches? I don't understand it. It's absolutely astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. But that seems to be what we are led to believe. Now, this week, you know, I was going back. I watched the game again. How can we force a wide receiver to inches from the sideline and not slap the ball? Yeah, I don't know. Defensively in the backfield, there were a number of people that had some bad games. Leonard Johnson, again, had a bad game. I know Leonard's a nice guy. We know we like his family. Right now, he's not playing very good football. Adrian Claiborne, who I happen to think the world of, and think that he gets graded fairly unfairly because of what's going on, we can't tell, based on the scheme, whether he's supposed to be going inside on some of these plays or whether he's supposed to be getting outside. Coach Schiano's defense that he talked about from Rutgers and he talked about in Miami and everywhere else before seemed to talk about the defensive end setting the edge, unless your linebacker was outside and he could set the edge depending on your scheme. There were a number of times that Steve walked through and that exist on the tape where Adrian was jumping inside. Now, he jumped inside seemingly intentionally, as if that was the plan. If that's the plan, then the plan sucks. If it's not, if Adrian's freelancing, that's on him. Gerald McCoy was another wrecking ball this week. He was killing people this week. Now, when I went back and looked at the tape, aside from the fact that I look at the stats, we had 12 rushes total. 12 rushes total for 39 yards. The Niners rushed 40 times for 187 yards. Are you shitting me? That is absolutely amazing. Captain Reno in the chat room, for you folks on the podcast, Captain Reno in the chat room brings up a point. Scramble drill, when we would flush Kaepernick, which we did from time to time because we sent a lot of pressure, our secondary apparently just forgot they had to cover on a number of occasions. Now, one that I'm not going to throw someone on the bus on is Jonathan Banks in the end zone with Michael Crabtree. You can't give someone in short field that much time when you're manned up. Jonathan Banks was manned up on him. You're going to get beat. Right, that's not. I still do not feel that play is on Jonathan Banks on the side of the end zone. The three first downs converted on that same side of the field, however, two of them I believe were on Leonard Johnson. I don't remember who the third one was on. And just flat out not fucking covering anyone. At one point, Revis is talking to Leonard Johnson like, "Dude, aren't you supposed to have him?" Now, of course, I don't know if that's what he said. I didn't have a mic, but I can read lips. No, that's not true. I can't do that either. Statistically, I didn't even go through and do my highlighter bullshit that I normally do. Like, I was so depressed about it, I didn't do it. I could do that with you guys on the show tonight, because that might be interesting to do. Let's look at how one-sided this was. 22 total first downs to 13. That feels about right. They crushed us in every fucking regard. They converted 40% of their first down, or third downs. We converted 1 out of 10. 1 out of 10, 10% on third down conversions. Somewhere, Mike Shula and Les Steckel are laughing, belly laughs, about how bad this offense is. When we talk about this offense being offensive, that word's not even offensive enough. 1 out of 10. Get the fuck out of here. 376 yards to 183. Let's see, where is the other interesting area here? Though we did improve significantly in penalties this game. We only had 4 penalties for 32 yards. We were excellent in red zone efficiency, 100%. We are fortunate that the 49ers were not. This could have been an ugly, ugly game. Now, my notes, you guys know how I do my little notes or whatever. Is it me or is there no stream for all? I'll check the Ustream. Everything seems to be fine. That would appear to be you. At any rate, my notes here was the first one is that this game was thoroughly uninteresting. This is the first time in a long time that I've sat in a home game and gotten disinterested. Rook over in the chat room is bringing up some of the stats on. There were 2 drives where we had touchdowns. They were, you know, end of the half and then beginning of the third, I think, where we went essentially no huddle or hurry up. Coach Shiano's press conference talked about how you can't do that too much because they start to catch wind of it and then they can stop you. I would love them to force us to stop doing that because this other shit that we're doing, the planful, schemed, architected side of our offense, the stuff that we spend all week game planning on and putting together the X's and O's on, sucks balls. It's horrible. And I don't know if it's execution. Steve White points to execution this week. He says it's not all on Sullivan. Guys missing their blocks. Guys missing their assignments. Receivers not running the proper routes. Quarterbacks not hitting the guys that are open. Certainly saw some of that when I went back and watched it on tape. But I still see the same shit with receivers running double posts within 4 yards of one another. I still see no separation. I still see no opportunistic play calling when the defense starts to show you what they do. No adjustments at all. Man, our chat room is on fire tonight, guys. You podcast people don't see this. Calico Jack says 17 plays in those 2 drives that resulted in touchdowns. 7 of those were no huddle. And admittedly, you can't go no huddle all the time. Sorry, Chip Kelly. But at this level, and at any level, fuck this level, at any level, the defense is going to show you the things they like to do. Now, in this particular case, that defense is damn stout. And they're stout at every level. Aldon Smith whipped Donald Penn on a number of plays. That's going to happen. In fact, one when he sacked Glennon. I can't give Glennon the sack. I mean, Glennon barely got into his back pedal when Aldon Smith was there. And Glennon just went over and patted Donald Penn on the back. He's like, hey, it happens, big fella. Right? Live to fight another day. But they were able to get pressure with 4 guys. They didn't have to do much more than that. Mike Glennon is still a fucking statue. And that's not his fault. He is what he is. Rook in the chat room says the other 10 series netted 11 yards, 1.1 yards per series. Per series. Here's our drive. You know how we do the drive chart. 3 and out punt, 3 and out punt, 5 and out punt, 3 and out punt, 5 and out punt. And then we get a touchdown. Come back after that, 3 and out punt, 3 and out punt. 10 play drive for a touchdown. 10 play, 92-yard drive for a touchdown. We then fumble on the kickoff, give it up on downs, and throw an interception. I'm looking at the chat room, guys. Sorry, I drifted off watching you guys talk about the Saints game. We have a couple things to be excited about. Levante David continues to impress. Darrell Revis is playing good football, guys. I don't understand. There's some hatred around Darrell Revis. Apparently, this is where we start doing the thing, well, he's making $16 million. He should be doing that. Well, motherfucker, that's what we offered to pay him. What do you want him to do? Go play quarterback? I think Jonathan Banks has shown some signs of improvement. Mark Barron had a pretty decent game. But at the end of the day, all of those ingredients don't mean shit if we can't give them a plan that puts them in a position to win. Now, in this particular game, despite all of the ineptitude, we're in a position to come back. If we get a stop on that last drive, don't let them get down there and make it a two-score game, this game becomes suddenly interesting. Despite an entire game full of just absolute shit football. And on that last drive, how many times did we get them to third down? Goodness gracious, guys. I mean, I can't be the only one who was frustrated by that, right? Here we go. They start on their 20. One third down. Third and 12 from the 29. Convert. Third and 6 from the Tampa Bay 29. Convert. Third and 5 from the Tampa Bay 5. And we finally stop them. Our only third down conversion was an offsides. I think you're right. I think it was by penalty. I am really sorry about the coughing. And Roman, Captain Bones in the chat room says, frustrated, a Bucks game, saying ain't so. I know. That's been our year. Frustration after frustration. But, all right, my other notes about this game. So we talked about it being thoroughly uninteresting, which it was. Our offense was horrible most of the day, which it was. By the way, that's a carryover. That I didn't even have to edit that line. It's exactly as bad as it was. And Calico Jack, he questioned whether I should, you know, scope it to this year. I'm not trying to go back in time on this. So, yeah, I mean, I get your point. We could certainly go back in time on this. But I kind of did a mental reset. Came into this year with a lot of excitement. We had revamped the secondary. We had all this offensive firepower. We thought we had a whole offseason to work on. We'd be ready to go. And we sputtered from the beginning, and we haven't ever recovered. I tried to come up with three things to be happy about on every game. We were ninth in offense last year, says Rook, but I'm pretty sure that's because of that big run in the middle. We accumulated a lot of offense in that run, and then we fell apart. Kurt Creel in the chat room says we're missing a lot of Dougie. This is interesting. There are a couple of articles on Pro Football Focus that were talking about yards after the tackle. Our running back situation is probably something we should be excited about. So Doug Martin, I actually totally believe, is a unique back. He is uniquely gifted. I am excited that Doug Martin's a Buccaneer. I think that I can't wait for him to get back and healthy, and I definitely think he makes a difference. Our offensive line has underperformed this year. Between Carl Nix's issues, our inability to backfill that guard position, and Davin Joseph's regression, our offensive line has been absolutely horrible. Now, there are times, or there have been times, where they've blocked fairly well. Now, you got to throw Lorig into this, too, because he hasn't played particularly well either coming back from injury. So we get Mike James, and Mike James shows some promise. Now, I don't think anyone's trying to say Mike James should start instead of Doug Martin, but he showed that we had some depth. That was great. And then, of course, Mike James goes down. And we think the world is over. And then Bobby Rainey shows up. And Bobby Rainey is a pretty talented guy. And Bobby Rainey, in this particular article, which is Between the Tackles, Part 2, Bobby Rainey is turning heads with his yards after contact. He's a little bowling ball. Here's the quote I want to come out here. Talking about Bobby Rainey's earned his yards as much as anyone this season, and not just on inside carries. He has by far the highest percentage of yards after contact this season, with 73.5% of his yards coming after the first defender reaches him. They go on to say that's nowhere near as impressive as Larry Johnson's numbers in 2009, which were 92.2% of his yards after a defender touches him. But Bobby Rainey is actually second in the league total, but number one in percentage of yards after contact. Now, Roman, Captain Bones in the chat room wants to know what will happen to Bobby when Doug and Mike James return. Not a thing. My guess is that those guys both all have contracts. I mean, Doug's still on his original contract. If anything, this gives us leverage with Doug Martin. Mike James and Bobby Rainey are both inexpensive guys, probably on 3-year deals. You guys know I'm not a contracts guy, but that would be my guess. Rook says that Rainey has sub 4.5 speed. I don't care. If you can take a run 80 yards and not get tracked down, you've got sufficient game speed. Buck for Life in the chat room says Rainey is greater than James. I don't know that we have enough film on James to know what that is. But what I do know is in this league, you need depth at running back. And what we have is depth at running back. It's one of the few positions that we seem to have depth at. Now, we had to use all of it this year. But one could hope that these guys will actually get healthy and we'll have them back. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing all around. Now, while we were discussing running backs, there was a discussion over in the chat room about tight ends, which we don't really have any of. You guys know I have fallen in smit with Tim Wright, who I have said from the beginning is not really a tight end. Because, everyone, he's not a tight end. He is really a split end, which is really just a fat receiver. Big receiver. It's not really fat. He doesn't look fat at all. It's a joke. Tim Wright has impressed. He is something I am excited about. I don't know that this offense knows how to use a guy like Tim Wright. My guess is they'll try and make him bigger in the offseason, then he'll stop being fast, which is really the advantage he has right now. But when you looked at the San Francisco 49ers, they certainly know how to use Vernon Davis. Tim Wright can do those things. I know Captain Bones is joking in the chat room, but this is the kind of thing that a lot of fans say and aren't joking. He says, so much depth at running back, we should put one in at tight end as if they're some sort of interchangeable blocks. We all know that they're not. We have a guy who can kind of play the position right now. And his name is Tim Wright. Every time he comes off the field, it pisses me off. And that happens a lot. Anytime Sky Dawson goes onto the field, it pisses me off. Anytime the player that wears number 89 goes onto the field, it pisses me off. And I don't mean to jump ahead to the Skulls and Swords and remind you guys, you need to get your Skulls and Swords in because we'll be doing Skulls and Swords in a few moments. You guys remember me calling 89 out the week before for how horrible he was in blocking. Pretty sure, and I couldn't bring myself to look at it again, but I'm pretty sure he's the one who fumbled the handoff on the crazy reverse at the end of the game. Calico Jack asked for missing Ogletree yet. Damn you, Calico Jack. Damn you. Because conceptually, yeah, I guess I am. He's clearly better than Sky Dawson or this guy 89. That is a fact. Shepard. He's terrible. Absolutely terrible. I don't want to commit his name to memory. His name should be in Velcro on that panel. He's on IR now. I don't wish him injury, but that gets him off the field. At any rate, Kurt Creel in the chat room brings up, did anyone notice that Dougie's 1,454 yards last year with zero fumbles? I think we did notice it last year. I think right now no one really thinks about him. Now, we're not going to go into game planning for the St. Louis Rams because, to be honest, it just doesn't make any fucking sense. We can talk about not running stunts on defense and how the efficacy of Gerald McCoy and the rest of the defense goes up. Steve White has talked about this ad nauseum. The staff doesn't care. Coach Schiano believes we're just a few pieces away on defense. We've got the scheme. We've got the system. We're just a few core pieces away from having a dominant defense. He disregards the fact, in my opinion, which I guess by definition makes it an opinion, that this defense has done what it has done in spite of his scheme, not because of his scheme. Now, it's funny because Steve White called out again. There was, of course, Schiano taking credit for the rebirth of Gerald McCoy's career, which is bullshit. But apparently we're just a few small pieces away. Got to go get some more pieces. Need some more groceries to make this shit work. Bones is still on the discussion about backs in as tight ends. He says they use the fullback Larson in as a tight end versus the 49ers. I don't know if that's true. I don't have all the plays memorized. It's not a stretch to see a fullback go into a position typically occupied by a tight end. That doesn't make him a tight end. That makes him a fullback who is in a position that's typically occupied by a tight end. My guess is if that was the case, he was in there blocking. but he's still a fullback. Chris in OP brings up this comment, the scheme sucks. We have an all-pro type player at every level of the defense. I concur 100%. I think that the scheme sucks. Now, I just saw something here when I looked down. I've got the game book. This game where we had clawed our way back in. Does anyone want to guess at the time of possession difference in the fourth quarter? And then I want to talk about Rook's comment in the chat room that we may need a new grocer. Because well-played extension of my analogy about groceries, by the way. In the fourth quarter, the 49ers had the ball, if this is correct, 13 minutes and 15 seconds. For those of you who don't know, there's 15 minutes in a quarter. Yeah, bro. Captain Bones in the chat room just goes, only in the fourth quarter? Yeah. 13 minutes and 15 seconds. I'm going back to find it. I can't believe that this is true. Opening drive. They go down and get their field goal. Use up 4 minutes. We fumble. We only had the ball long enough. 11-3 doesn't even add up. What are you talking about? Kurt in the chat room says 11-3 doesn't add up. I was rounding. It's 13 minutes and 15 seconds and a minute and 45 seconds, I'm guessing. Yeah, 13:15 and 1:45. That level of ineptitude is just fucking offensive, guys. And I know I went on the assault earlier. And you guys who have asked me, a lot of you at the tailgate will ask me questions. What do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen with Shiano's career? Is he going to be here next year? All this, and you've heard me be resigned to the fact that Shiano's coming back. I believe he is. I don't believe, you know, short of touching little kids, that Coach Shiano's going anywhere. No, I'm not implying he'd ever do that. Jesus Christ, I've got to make disclaimers for everything. I do not think there's anything Shiano could do to get run out of town right now. I think he is there. That makes me very sad because this team is not very good and they haven't shown any improvement. This is the thing that no one's really talking about. Where the fuck is the improvement week on week? Because I'm seeing nothing but steps back by most people. The defense seems to be what it is. When we let them play football, they do well. When we geek them out with goofy-ass stunts, they get beaten. We can scheme those athletes into ineptitude. On offense, we have done nothing but take steps back. Am I wrong? So when we go into the St. Louis game, we go into the New Orleans game, and you know, I'd love to hear who's going to New Orleans. Maybe we can all get together and have a drink. I'll be out there for sure. Looking forward to it. Love the city. Hope we can fight a good fight. I still think that these players are good enough. Like this game against the 49ers, you take away that goofy-ass fumble touchdown, this is a competitive game, guys. It's boring as fuck. But despite our ineptitude, we made it competitive. But when we go into those next games, you've got to start showing improvement. Mike Glennon, if they have a prayer of Mike Glennon being the guy, I'm not a huge fan. I don't like a lot of what I see, but he is a young third-round pick who should have probably been lower than that. He's playing at about that level. Some of this is not his fault. Because when he looks up, he sees a bunch of guys that are covered. It's all about seeing those guys kind of take some steps forward. And the sad part is these fucking horrible coaches can stop that from happening. So when we go to St. Louis, we're going to have to try and see things like Glennon stepping forward. In the chat room, Kurt Creel mentions there are 16 tight ends selected in the 2013 NFL draft, including four in the first two rounds. Tim Wright was not one of them. interesting data. Don't really care. I don't think you have to draft tight ends. I think you can go buy, you know, build them, find them. I just think we do a really bad job of that, which is bad. Roman, Captain Bone says, Ben Cyborg is really wanting to host What the Buck members of Visiting Nolens, which is great. I'll hit him up on Facebook. Cyborg's a good dude. Trying to get a hold of the Pope and the Pope's son and Mac the Quack and Candace and all of our PFUFA brothers and sisters. It should be a very good time. I'm staying in the Garden District other than Thursday when I'll be on Canal, but I intend on being absolutely on Bourbon Street. That's where I go. That's all that I am. So if you're going there, have fun, and I'll be there with you as well. I don't have any use for walking around down by the river until I'm going down there for Cafe Dumont. Anyway, back on track. We started talking about these things in passing, but the three things that I'm upset about: the offense was offensive. Glennon took yet another clear step backwards. Sullivan and Sheridan are bordering on Voldemort territory. I think they're both horrible. I would broom both of them. All right, let me get over to the Facebook wall. I know that Cheryl posted that, which was very good. Incomplete, still neat time. I can't believe I didn't see that before. I was saying you don't have to draft a tight end, asshole. I'm not an asshole, Kurt. I was just commenting on your comment. And you were actually agreeing with me. Okay. See, this is one of those things with chat rooms. It's kind of tough to understand. I thought he was talking about how many guys were drafted and we should have drafted them. I would apologize, but I don't do that because I'm an asshole. All right. Here are skulls and swords from you guys for this game. I'm going to reiterate before I even read them. One skull and one sword. Let's see who the first fucker is who breaks this rule that's existed for 8 years. Captain Board, sword. Captain Bones, sword to Tim Wright. No skull. Daniel Gonzalez, sword to No Huddle. Skull to Failed Reverse. Daniel Gonzalez is making up his own fucking rules. Jeremy King weighs in. Sword, William Golston. Skull to Donald Penn. Two solid selections. Amar Bahala, whose name I butcher every fucking week. I should get phonetic spellings on these things. Skull. Tough to say between Banks and someone on the D-line for missed tackles, but he'll go with Bowers. He didn't hold contain on cap when scrambling, and he sucks. Sword to Glennon. Receivers hardly got open, but when they did, he delivered, especially on those impressive 80 and 92-yard drives. Wow. Okay. Lucas Brodermarkle, sword David. Listening to broadcast, you never know there was 10 other guys playing defense. Skull me for thinking we even had a shot. I feel like the only pick one was directed solely at me. It might have been, Lucas, but it wasn't. It's actually at a lot of people. But I appreciate you paying attention. That's good loving. Stephen Graves, sword Levante David. Skull me for buying tickets to the Rams game. Go Bucks players. Go away, Bucks coaches. Jason Mills, sword McCoy, skull to Shiano for not going to the hurry-up offense more often. Jason Watson, where'd you go? Sword, U.S. Army, not since we won hearts and minds has our military brought such promise of hope to a group of people. Okay. Skull, Mike Glennon, 2 weeks ago he started a trend of one horrible head-dropping play per week, but the outbreak was at least contained with him. Now, much like the MRSA, it is spreading rapidly through the Bucks roster. Christopher Helm. David, sword, coaching staff, skull. Very low count on swords and skulls. I guess I could kind of expect that. It is holiday time. B. Sizzle says Donald Penn can make a drum set out of all of his skulls this year. Hasn't his turf toe kicked in yet? You know, it's funny. A lot of people think Donald Penn is horrible. In fact, they'll talk about it all the time. When I was watching the tape, there are times where he got beat like he stole something this week. But by and large, he plays pretty solid. It does not pretty, but he played pretty solid. The Alden Smith one was so ugly. It was funny when you saw Glennon go over there and pat him on the back. Kurt Creel in the chat room says, if Leonard Johnson's skull didn't give up third and infinity after the personal foul on Crabtree, that reverse would have never been called, which is absolutely true. Christine in the chat room says Podoya Street. Did I spell that right? No, you're probably trying to say Poydras, which is Poydras. It runs parallel to Canal. That's probably the street you're trying to think of. So, and Bones in the chat room says that that Penn is gangster, which is true. Rook in the chat room, sword to right, skull to shepherd. I'm going to tell you that I had some challenges. I think that there's a good case for Donald Penn. I think there's a great case for 89, whose name I still am not going to say. But I'm going to give the skull to Glennon this week, which will, of course, cause a chorus of people saying that I'm a Glennon hater. And I just don't care. He didn't play good football. Those two drives, he played well enough. They weren't particularly good, but they ended with touchdowns. So that's fine. The end justified the means. The problem I'm having, and this isn't all on Mike, by the way. This is on McNulty, who is apparently the heir apparent for offensive coordinator in this organization. As the quarterback's coach, you're letting him get worse, you fucking asshole. You've got to stop the kid from doing the things that we didn't want the previous guy to do. You cannot let him fixate on receivers. He seems, by all outward appearances, to be a good kid, a smart kid. He works hard. He has some physical skills. That's great. The throw to Vincent Jackson for a touchdown is a big league throw, guys. You guys know I'm not a fan of his arm strength, but boy, I'll tell you what, that's a hell of a fucking throw. It was the right read. He was decisive. He threw it over underneath coverage and right to the receiver. That is a very tough fucking throw to make. And here we sit, letting him regress week on week. Setting him up for fucking failure. Not recognizing his strengths and his weaknesses and helping him, but throwing him out there and letting him get kicked in the mouth. It's absolutely fucking horrible. So Glennon was my skull. My sword was easy. And Lavonte David's a great choice every week. The guy is fucking ridiculous. If he doesn't get contention for Defensive Player of the Year, it's crazy. We have, I think, found a potential next Derek Brooks in this kid. He is phenomenal. I can't say enough good things about him. But Gerald McCoy went in there and was absolutely fucking killing people. Go back and watch this game again. No, he doesn't get home all the time. But he is destroying offensive linemen. If Gerald McCoy ever had the support that Warren Sapp had, this guy would be out of this world. It is absolutely astonishing. So he's my sword. Now, I had predicted on offense that Rainey would be the answer, and clearly with the way we ran, that was not true. And I predicted David on defense. And again, you know, it's funny, the interception return for a touchdown, that's a really critical play. We were offsides. It was the right call, right? It was absolutely the right call. You know, it's funny, Rook in the chat room, how Spence looked, he didn't pop off of film to me. That doesn't mean he didn't have a good game, but he just didn't pop. Who's introducing Aaron to hand grenade? Is Spence going to introduce him? That's great. Is Spence going? Good. Yeah, hand grenade's phenomenal. So the keys that we had to the game were to create turnovers, which we didn't do a very good job of. That interception return for touchdown was a huge game-changing momentum thing. And if you watch the replay, it's silly. He makes this circus catch. They're celebrating on the sideline. Kaepernick's right there. No one blows the whistle. He runs to the house, and he goes out with a pull. Rediscover the running game, not one big run and then shit, which we didn't do. Give Glennon some targets, Sullivan, and we didn't do that. So for all the things we needed to do, we decided not to do any of them. Yeah, the chest bump, Calico's absolutely on what I was talking about. If you go back and watch the replay on NFL Game Rewind, he runs down there, and I think it's Dakota Watson. It might have been Mason Foster. I think it's Dakota Watson, though. I don't think he was as thick as Mason. And they're chest bumping after the interception. And then someone's like, hey, dude, they haven't blown the whistle. And off he goes. So that was funny. All right, so we got the Rams game coming up. A couple of notes. And then we'll do the predictive MVPs that are over on Facebook. If you haven't gotten your predictive MVPs for the Rams game, get those up on the Facebook page. And we will talk about those. With St. Louis and with New Orleans, we have to look for hope. It was Watson. Thank you, Calico. We have to look for hope. And to be honest, I think it's got to start in the trenches. It's got to start where it's about nutting up. Get out there and play with some fucking pride. Block somebody. Quinn's a beast. Rams defense can absolutely get after the passer. Our quarterback is not, let's just say, mobile. So that offensive line has got to have their A game on. We've got to do something to slow down that pass rush. Chain says the key to the game is never get third in any distance. Well, given our third down conversion rate, we should just never get to third down. If we get to third down, we lose. This is the way it works. I didn't do the third down analysis where it's normally third and four and we're in shotgun and we insist on doing something bullshit. But when you can't run the ball, it doesn't really fucking matter. Not in Sully's character, I know. The other thing I hope that we do, Sullivan or whoever calls the game plan, that's something else I want to talk about, by the way, which is this the way this whole thing is going to break down for Shiano at the end of the year, or how I believe it will, and how many people do with assistance. I want to bring something up that apparently no one's paying attention to, which is absolutely flooring me as all of the media members start to kiss this guy's ass because he's still going to be around, and they actually rely on him for their fucking livelihood. We've got to get Glennon to throw the ball around. Now, he still targeted a lot of receivers this week, which is amazing because when I went back and watched the tape, it didn't feel that way. But when you look at the numbers, what did he target? 8 different receivers? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah. Targeted 8 different receivers. Sky Dawson and Eric Page once, but everyone else, Bobby Rainey once on the swing pass. Tim Wright was targeted 9 times, hit 7, opened more than that. So he's moving the ball around, but for some reason it doesn't feel that way in-game. Chain still likes Glennon, which is fine. I don't dislike Glennon as a human being, certainly. I just don't think he's a particularly talented quarterback. I think he is what we have. I think we know what he is, and you game plan for it. Now, this plan that seems to be in place, which is that retain Shiano and fire a bunch of the assistants because they're the ones who are wrong, implies that Shiano is not the one controlling their game plan. Now, if you listen to the press conferences, it's pretty clear that Shiano's controlling the defensive game plan. If you know anything about how much he controls, from temperature to snacks to timings to all of this other bullshit, do you really think he leaves the offensive game plan completely in someone else's control? Really? Really? Now, to be honest, I could give two fucks if Sullivan gets fired. I think he's absolutely worthless as a coordinator if he's the one calling the plays, if he's the one building the scheme. If it's Shiano leveraging him as a mouthpiece, then my angst is misdirected, and it should be directed at Coach Shiano, who by all outward appearances is probably a pretty nice guy, a pretty decent human, but seems to be kind of a shit coach. I wish I knew the big piece that I don't understand, because I believe, and I have a bias, which I will own, that I think he is not a good coach. I don't understand why there are players that are getting his back. I get why the press is doing it, because they rely on him to eat. The players don't. Not the players that are coming out and talking to this board. Jerry McCoy is going to get a job. If he left here, he goes and gets big money somewhere else. He doesn't have to kiss anyone's ass. Captain Mullen says he thinks Glennon has a great cannon of an arm, which immediately makes me think you've never watched a Bucs football game where Glennon played in it. He would just like to see better chemistry and understanding between him and the receivers. We've tried to dismiss this concept that he has a cannon of an arm, and we've done a crazy thing. Here's what we did. We went way outside the box here. We watched the games, and it's not true. He has a sufficient arm. I don't want him throwing outside the hash, certainly not to the long side of the field, which is a little bit different in the NFL than it is in the college game. His deep ball is not what people made it out to be. I don't know why. It could be a mechanics issue. It absolutely could be. He could have a very strong arm. It just doesn't come across in this thing we call the game. in the chat room, they're bringing up the pass from Kaepernick to Vernon Davis, which he flipped about 62 yards, it looked like, for the touchdown. Davis was open for about, I don't know, 20 or 30 seconds on that play. But Kaepernick hit him in stride for the touchdown. That's a hell of a throw. And because we didn't have contain on the outside on that play, Kaepernick was able to slide to the outside, set his feet, and release it. Captain Bones is defending himself a little bit. Not that I attacked Captain Bones, but he says, I think he has one. Didn't say I like the way I've been seeing him use it. I don't think he has it because he's thrown the ball long and it just doesn't show up. Right? That's the problem. Unless he's intentionally dialing down. It's like taking and hitting your wedge at 60% all the time for fun. Rook brings up a really good point that he has a strong arm for a West Coast offense. He does have good control on short to intermediate routes. The routes that I've bragged about to him, the touchdown to Vincent this week, the one to Vincent in Buffalo, the crossing route to Tyquan Underwood 4 weeks ago, those are all 20 yards and in. So let me hit the MVPs, or the predictive MVPs. I think I have that up. Here we go. Going to refresh that. See, not many of these out here either, but we'll see who's got them out there. Bucko Pat weighs in offensive MVP Underwood, defensive MVP Watson, score 27 to 23 bucks. B-Sizzle, offensive MVP Jared Cook, defensive MVP Robert Quinn, Rams 35 to 7. Wow. Richie Infantino, St. Louis 16, Tampa Bay 7, final. No predictive MVPs. Brian Clay, Bucks win the game 24-13. Offensive MVP Vincent Jackson, defensive MVP Levante David. Stephen Graves mentions he'll be in St. Louis this Sunday. Are you guys going to do a tailgate or anything? Would love to join in. I know that Tracy and some other folks are going to be there, so definitely make sure that we get Stephen Graves' information. If you guys want to all hook up there and get some pictures, that would be great for you Road Warriors that are making it up to the St. Louis game. From my side, with regards to the MVPs, I think that this is one of those games where we're going to see the money come through. I think we're going to see Darrelle Revis this week. And I think he's played great football this year, to be honest. Like I said, I was very impressed with the way he's tackled. And for some reason, I don't know that I didn't pay attention. This guy's a pretty sure tackler. But I think Revis is going to pop this week. On the offensive side of the ball, I think that they're going to go back to the well. And I think that I don't think that the Rams believe it. I think Tim Wright's going to be your guy. I'm on the right bandwagon. If they would learn how to use Tim Wright, they could target him 15 times a game, and he would catch 15 of them and probably have two touchdowns until someone adjusts. He's a mismatch where they're playing him. That's the beauty of it. Is Vincent Jackson still a talented receiver? Yes. Is there anyone else out there? No. Tyquan Underwood is hot and cold, best case. So I'll go Tim Wright. I always predict a win for the Bucs. I'm never going to pick them to lose. But this is going to be a very difficult game. I have not seen us show the ability to score. But I have to give us credit for getting some points because I don't think this can be, a game like the NFC Championship game. I don't think that's the way this is going to go down. So I'm going to pick and pretend that our defense scores and we're going to win 24-21 over the Rams in St. Louis, which will then cause a chorus of boos as it impacts our draft position. Spen is telling us that there's snow in St. Louis on Sunday, so there probably won't be tailgating. It'll be bargating with Dave King, who's King Elvis, or King Ram. Great guy, one of our PFUFA brethren. Terrific guy up there. Ram Man, also president of the PFUFA, acting president, will be up there. So hopefully you guys will all get together, which will be great. Kirk Creel says that Tim Wright's gotten him into a fantasy football Super Bowl in the Yahoo League, which is great. So, hey, listen, I want to thank you guys for joining the show tonight. I want to remind you we've got our watch party at our wing house, 8001 Hillsborough Avenue. Get over there. We'll probably be there. Game starts at 1. We'll probably be over there by 12, I suspect. That's what we usually do, back in our back room. And we are collecting jeans this week, I believe. Cheryl's posted that up on the board a couple times. Use jeans. We're going to it doesn't matter what size, what style. I mean, preferably not ones with fucking grease stains all over them, Sizzle. But you know, jeans, we're going to give them to folks that need jeans. And, you know, we can't seem to do anything without pulling a charitable angle to it. And to be honest, I think it's phenomenal that we're doing it. So thanks to all of you who participate in that. If you've got the jeans, throw them in some bags. We'll get them put together. And we will get those delivered to the folks who need them. What else? I think that's it. I think that's it. We'll let you guys know what the schedule is for next week. And we'll also let you know we are planning an end-of-the-year banquet. This is the first time we've announced it in public. We are planning an end-of-the-year banquet for our group, for the What the Buck family. I have not got the location yet. For the core group, the tailgate crew, that the people that make those tailgates work for you, they're all going to be there. We're going to have an award ceremony, etc. We're not sure what it's going to cost. We'll let you know what the tickets are. All we're trying to do with the tickets is to pay for the event. Anything that goes over that will go to a charity because that's how we do. So we'll let you guys know what that's all about. My guess is it will probably be in late January. It'll be somewhere in the Tampa Bay area. So keep your heads up about that. If you know places that are banquet halls that you think would be nice, let me know. Drop me a note at questions@whatthebuck.net, and I will follow up with them. And once we get that thing locked down, we'll let you guys know. I think it'll be a fun night to celebrate a great season of being Bucks fans. Not a great Bucks season, but a great season of being Bucks fans. If I don't talk to you again before Christmas, which I can't believe, have a Merry Christmas. This is one of my favorite times of the year. Hopefully you guys are with the people you love and doing things with them that you don't often get a chance to do, and spending that quality time. It's not all about the stuff. It's about the time. So hopefully you're going to be able to do that. And hopefully I'll be able to talk to you guys on Tuesday and reiterate that, because I get all mushy around the holidays. So until next time, from the whole What the Buck family. Oh, shit. I didn't even tell you about this. We have new cornhole champions. Let me get the picture up. I think I've got it in here. Cut over to this. I want to transition to the next one. How do I go to it? This new version, while I like it, has me frustrated because I don't know how to do anything yet. Give me a second, guys. I will find the picture of our cornhole champions. Here it is. The Commish and Matt DeRoma. Big congratulations to the Commission and Matt DeRoma. They defeated everyone in a they defeated me, actually. Me and Frank the Tank made our way back for the loser's bracket. We lost to them in the first game, and then we lost to them again, 21-18 in the final game. They are this year's champions. They've already started posting the pictures. It's going to be tremendous. They will reign a reign of terror, and we will try to take it back from next year. So from the whole What the Buck family, after a great season, we'll see you guys Sunday, and then I'll see you guys in New Orleans, but I'll talk to you between now and then. Until then, I am out of here if I can find out where the hell the audio is at. Here it is.
Tampa. Tampa. Bucks. Josh Freeman. Vince Jackson. Playboy back. Bowers healthy. Now that being said, George Costanza, Mr. Steve White,
thank you.
See, now that's some funny shit.
Right?
Interesting. What the hell was I?
Impartial as I'd like to think I am.
Here's the thing.
So I give zero bucks.
Here's the thing. I don't care.
Right?
Because I give myself credit for being a relatively smart dude. At any rate, the only reason he should go in the game is if Josh is wheeled off on a fucking stretcher. Doug Martin, Mark Barron, Sean Golson, Levante David, the Grievous.